And coming up tonight on Discovery's Science Show, something a little bit different. Who says scientists can't get creative? We've got a cast of thousands. We've got people from CSIRO. We've got people from universities. We've got people from everywhere. And we're all chucking in our 2 cents worth tonight. Might add up to $86.50.
I'd just like to point out, Phil, it's not necessarily nighttime.
Welcome. 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 Stand
and welcome. Hello, good evening and welcome
to Discovery.
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 Listen to Discovery.
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 Sounds like a lot of fun.
Somewhere in space, this may all be happening right now.
Now, to the speeded up brain of a user, that sound lasts for 4 hours and sounds like this.
Discovery.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed, and welcome to an absolutely chaotic edition of Discovery. We've thrown all the rules out the window. We're going scriptless. We're going pants-free tonight on Discovery. Tonight, today, whenever you're listening to us, we have no idea what we're doing on. We got all the microphones on, and we've got a whole bunch of people in the studio, so I'm just going to go around from sort of right to left, or as you're looking at it, left to right. Matt Clark, say hi.
Hello.
Hello, and you might need to speak a little bit more into the microphone there.
Hello.
That's better. We wouldn't want to miss those golden tonsils. Next to Matt is Kat, which is alliteratively nice.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, how you doing? Phil,
good.
In the background.
Hello, everyone.
Now, next to Phil, we've got new but strangely old member of the Discovery team, Bridget. How you doing?
Hello.
Welcome back to 2SER, or for the first time. I have no idea. Whichever mode you want to be in tonight. Behind Bridget, Ian.
Hello.
Hi, Ian. How are you doing? Next to Ian is Helen.
Hello, folks.
And way over the other side, hanging out in the background, David.
Hello.
Hello, David. Everyone's in the studio. Everyone's got something to say. So what we normally do on Discovery is we kick off with a bit of news. So we're going to do the same thing tonight. It's just a little bit more ad-libbed. So hang on 1 second. We've got a little bit of an intro that we need to do there. But that's enough of that. Over to Bridget with the news. Bridget, what's in the news this week? What have you got for us?
Well, there was a few interesting items in the Sydney Morning Herald. For example, omega-3 oil. We've all heard about how good that is.
Now, omega-3 oil, I associate that with fish.
That is fish oil. That's exactly right. There's something fishy about it. And what they found is that they gave it to children in England and it improved their reading and spelling skills. This was this test done by researchers at Oxford University. They found that fish oil supplements were given to them. 117 children had dyspraxia, which means it's hard for them to tie their shoelaces, and among other things. And this was greatly improved by the fish oil, and it improved their concentration and behavior. So fish oil for your kids.
I have a theory, and that is that the kids were so shocked by being force-fed fish oil. They're like, whatever you want me to do, I'll pay attention. Just stop giving me that fish oil, I think is probably what's happening here.
Well, that's a possible theory, and maybe they need to do a bit more research.
Okay, this is a possibility. So what else is in the news?
Well, teeth. Now, some people have teeth that are painful. They're hypersensitive. So they've got this new method whereby they stick a little bead on your tooth.
A little bead.
They stick it on, and it leaches fluoride, and it forms a protective seal over your teeth, and then you don't have any pain.
Okay, now hands up. Anyone in the room, anyone here got sensitive teeth? Well, I guess you have to do hands up in an audible way. So audible hands up. Who's got sensitive teeth in the room?
I have.
That would be Phil?
No, just the middle one down the bottom.
Yeah? Yeah. Okay, so we've got a bead for you. It's fluoride bead.
Yeah, you stick it on the teeth and you don't have to worry about it anymore.
Cool.
But how big is it, do they say?
Tiny. It says tiny.
It's only like a
centimeter. Don't give dimensions.
You know. Are you in danger of getting too much fluoride and getting fluoridosis?
Well, I think you'll have to contact Dr. Gayatri Kutru at Leeds University to find out more details.
So the question there is it might cure your sensitive teeth, but you know, you might get fluoridosis and I mean, what's that gonna do to you, Ian?
You're gonna get spots all over your teeth. And you can get brittle bones as well.
So get spots all over your teeth, brittle bones, but you won't have that annoying thing when you eat an ice cream anymore. I think it's a fair trade, wouldn't you say?
I hope I can get it in magenta.
As always, cutting edge news here on Discovery. All right, so On Discovery, we like to think of ourselves as not just about science, but we're about the crossover between science and culture. We like to think that we're sensitive New Age science geeks. So what we'd like to do now is get a little bit of science poetry happening. David, you've been having a bit of a chat to some young scientists lately who have been in the news. They've been trotting their stuff around the country. But these guys have been given a little bit of a poetic challenge. What's the story here? What's going on?
Yes, I went to an event recently that was held in a pub in Sydney for the Fresh Innovators Competition. So the Fresh Innovators Competition is, the purpose of it is to allow early career innovators to communicate their ideas to the media and to the general public. And so at this particular event, they were given a task to complete, and that was to write a limerick or haiku summarizing their innovation. And they were given probably about 20 minutes to come up with this.
So this is under pressure here. Like, you're a scientist. Not only do you have to get up and tell us about your research, you've got to do it in the standard limerick style or in the ancient Asian form of poetry known as the haiku. And you've got to come up with that now.
Yes, the five-syllable, seven-syllable, five-syllable haiku form and the limerick. And anyway, so we're going to play a few of those haikus that are, and limericks that I recorded
on the
night.
Well, let's start with a limerick. We've got Joe Lappage.
Yes, so Joe Lappage is an independent inventor from New South Wales, and she has come up with some sort of cat toilet seat that goes on your normal toilet seat.
I heard about this.
It allows you to bypass the kitty litter. So you basically...
Audible hands up, anyone who's ever had to pick up cat poo off the floor. I'm one. Okay, so where do I line up to buy one of these? Shall we listen to Jo's limerick?
Yes.
See what she's got to say.
There once was a kitty named Honey, whose owner was in the head funny. In his tray was no litter, but he was no quitter. It's just that he goes on the dunny.
Very nice. And came up with that in how long did they have to write this limerick?
About 20 minutes.
20 minutes. I don't know about you, I've tried to write a limerick on stuff that isn't my own personal research, and it still had to come up with that last rhyme.
Well, we had to do it for the Christmas show, if I remember.
That's right. And you guys had weeks to prepare for that. So what's going on? Phil's up the back. Phil's going to do us a limerick. You've got 20 minutes, Phil. No, actually, let's make it really hard. You've got 5 minutes.
Start with, there once was a man from Nantucket. That's always a good place.
Don't go there. Okay, so back to David then. So we've got another one. We've got a limerick from a guy called Richard Shepherd. Tell us about Richard's work.
Okay, so Richard Shepherd is a researcher from the Australian Biosecurity Cooperative Research Centre in Victoria. And he has designed a program that allows farmers to diagnose diseases in their cows or in their, I guess, in their livestock.
A program as in a computer program?
Yes, a computer program.
Okay.
And
well, why don't we let the limerick tell us the rest?
There was a cow in Queensland that was shitting. I wonder what this bugger is getting. Put the signs in the boss, it'll tell you the cause, and for sure the Yanks will be smitten.
Apologise to that one in retrospect. Didn't quite see that one coming. It was in a pub, people, get over it. So Richard's obviously going with a fairly standard form of limerick there, which is that if you can swear, it makes the limerick better. Fantastic.
Isn't it obligatory?
I think it is. I think you have to do that. So it wasn't...
Okay.
see what you can work in there, Phil. Now, it wasn't just limericks. We had haikus as well. So just remind our listeners out there in Radioland the haiku.
Okay, so the haiku is a form of Japanese poetry that consists of a five-syllable verse followed by a seven-syllable verse and ended with another five-syllable verse.
Now, we're not trying to rhyme here. The essence of the haiku, as far as I can tell, is that it's supposed to very, very simply capture the essence of something.
And often they have some sort of seasonal theme to them to do with nature.
All right. Well, we've got a couple of examples of haikus here. Daniel Bongers, is that how we say his name?
I think it's Daniel Bongers.
It could be. I don't know, after a couple of drinks at the pub it could be the other way. What's Daniel's field of expertise?
So he has once again developed a software program that
I see a theme here.
Allows miners to troubleshoot.
This is miners as in people who work underground with picks and not young
birds.
People.
Yeah. Or no, not little blackbirds or little people. But yes, he's come up with a software program to allow miners who work underground to detect faults in their equipment.
Right. Well, let's see how he sums that up. The essence of that with a seasonal theme in traditional Japanese poetry. Here's Daniel Bonges.
Mind machines below. In all seasons, they break down. I detect the faults.
I can feel the culture in the room just rising as we're listening to this. So I hope you caught the, what is it, 5-7-5 syllable count there.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know whether they went very strictly with that.
Look, who's counting after a couple of pints anyway? This really should be, like, this should take the place of the academic abstract. Forget about abstract, just bring in the limerick or the haiku, and scientists will be much happier, and they'll be exercising the other part of their brain as well, which is kind of nice as well. David, thanks very much for sharing some physics poetry with us.
You're welcome.
But that's not it, or not physics poetry, some science poetry, but that's not it for poetry, because we actually have another Discovery team member here in the studio. Helen has brought in a couple of her favourite science poems. Helen, what are you sharing with us tonight?
Well, Chris, these are not really poems about science subjects as much as they're poems about, they have expressed certain views about the doing of science. I've got two here that I'd like to share with you. The first one is about cloning, and it's by Norma van der Plas. And it goes like this. Mary had a little lamb. Its fleece was slightly grey. It didn't have a father, just some borrowed DNA. It sort of had a mother, though the ovum was on loan. It was not so much a lambkin as a little lammy clone. And soon it had a fellow clone, and soon it had some more. They followed her to school one day, all cramming through the door. It made the children laugh and sing. The teachers found it droll. There were too many lammy clones for Mary to control. No other could control the sheep, since their programs didn't vary. So the scientists resolved it all by simply cloning Mary. But now they feel quite sheepish, those scientists unwary. One problem solved. But what to do with Mary, Mary, Mary?
Very nice, very nice. It's a nursery rhyme for today, really, isn't it? You know, it's an update of an old theme, something to sing the kids to at night, I think.
Yes, although, don't you think they'd get slightly worried, especially when you tell them you're planning a brother or sister for them?
But is it really any worse than Ring a Ring a Rosie, which is about the plague, for God's
yeah,
sake?
But
I mean,
at least we don't know that it's about the plague.
I have a feeling back in the old days when they came up with that one, when the kids would go to school the next day and go, but my friend Timmy's got spots all over his face. I wonder if that's... Anyway, enough of that. You've got another one for
I
us.
I do, and I have to say, look, this is a pretty long one. I've gone for the kind of ones in the ballad mode. This is The Rhyme of the Ancient Physicist, and it's by a Sydney physicist called Jack Kelly, who is a fairly close relative of the ABC's Karina Kelly. And, I'll share it with you now. It was an ancient physicist who one day said to me, I see from your computer screen you model in 3D. When I was young, we did not hope such wonders e'er to see, for all we had was real, not virtual reality. I really didn't want to know. I'd heard it all before from lecturers who rambled on about the days of yore of pentode valves and slide rules and such arcane devices, and who ignored the cleverness of tomographic slices. I fiddled with the format and wished he'd go away. Alas, it was an idle hope. I saw he meant to stay. When I was young, he murmured, on reminiscence bent, I hankered not for fame nor gold, but to experiment. The lad is bright, my teachers said, and quite good at debate. You should enroll him in the law, at which he'd be first rate. He'd earn a damn good living with the muscles of his jaw. He won't make money out of science, as you have heard before. But I was young and waterproof and had made up my mind that to the law I never was sufficiently inclined. I did enjoy an argument to see opinion swayed, but what was that compared with how the universe was made? He told me about where he'd been and all the things he'd done. The pay was marginal, he said, but by God it was fun. We were a bit like amateurs, there to enjoy the game. It mattered less who won or lost, the physics was the same. How could you be such dilettantes and let your science serve the evil ends of powerful men out to control the world? The young are more responsible. We worry about things like, will the earth be boiling hot, and balanced yangs and yins? We are now more professional in how our labs are run. And who would fund a grant if told, I'm doing it for fun? There is nothing wrong, of course, with feelings of elation, provided they do not harm our score in the citations. I saw upon a gravestone once. He smiled and looked at me. As you are now, so once was I. As I am, now you'll be. I thought perhaps it might be true when first I came in here. Then at the door he paused and said, a happier new year.
Very nice.
What do you make of that?
I think I've met that guy, actually.
Has he been wandering the corridors of unnamed university?
There's not just one.
Grey
hair. There's whole buildings full of them.
Stopping strangers to tell his story.
Yeah, there are. You're leaving at the end of the night.
It's scary, isn't it?
And sort of they trap you in the corridors. I remember. Ah. Yeah, it's frightening. Ah. I was getting goosebumps just listening to that. So thank you very much for the rhyme of the ancient physicist. And for once again lifting the cultural tone of the Discovery Studios here at 2SER in Sydney. Phil, you've got a limerick for us in the record time of about 5 minutes.
All right, here we go.
All right, closer to the microphone, my friend.
Here we go, okay. A random assortment of folk talked science and poetry and jokes, but said the producer, it could have been looser with some help from red wine or Coke.
Bravo, our resident wordsmith there, Phil Dooley. Helen, don't go away, because you've provided tonight's musical interlude. Now, normally on Discovery, we get about halfway through and they think, well, it's time for a bit of music. But tonight, I said, look, bring in whatever you can find. And Helen's come to the party with a CD. What have you got?
Well, I came across this little gem from NASA in my CD box. And it's by a bunch of people who call themselves the Chromatics. They are actually a group within NASA who, believe it or not, have been funded to sing songs about science.
You've got to love the American National Science Foundation. These guys will give money for anything.
And these songs are not only about science, but they actually align to the K-12 national science standards for about 8 subjects. Now, this sounds terribly, terribly boring and dull, but it's not that bad.
Well, let's have a bit of a listen and make up our own minds.
X-rays, gamma rays, high energy. Hot stars, heavy stars, high density. Quasars, black holes, supernovae. Powerhouses lighting up the galaxy. Flashing, bursting, pulsing objects we could see if we had X-ray eyes. If we had X-ray eyes. Going up the spectrum, repeat after me. Radio, infrared, visible UV. Keep going all the way, and what do you see? That's X-rays, gamma rays, high energy. An X-ray photon has a high frequency, which means a shorter wavelength than you could ever see.
I think we get the idea there. So this is not just music that we're listening to. This is educational. This is K-12.
It's good for you. Yes. It's like the high fiber music of astronomy.
It is really, yeah.
Omega 3s.
Yeah. Omega 3s, yes. You get everything in this. X-ray astronomy, omega 3s. Yeah, that was the NASA group, the Chromatics, singing the high energy groove, a song about X-ray astronomy.
I don't know about you, but I was getting into that. I was dancing in my chair. That's a total lie. Actually, I'm sorry. It may be all well-intentioned and so on, but I just don't think it's going to make it onto the next Hottest 100. Well, listen, here on Discovery, you are listening to Discovery across Australia, thanks to the Community Broadcasting Network and 2SER in Sydney, way up the top of the UTS Tower. This is Discovery. Up next, we've got Matt. Matt, you're joining us
with a little
bit of stuff about not global warming. What are we talking about here?
Well, this is something, at first I thought this was made up. It's actually It's actually called global dimming. Now, at first, someone's just made that up. There's No, global dimming.
Well, someone said global warming's been taken. I'll come up with something else.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then I thought someone was...
It's been overshadowed.
I thought it was something to do with the Liberal Party taking control of the Senate or something like that. But no, it's actually a reduction in the amount of sunlight that is hitting the Earth.
And okay. Because? Over the last,
well, because it's actually caused by little airborne, microscopic airborne particles of soot and all types of things that come from burning fossil fuels.
Right.
Called smoke.
Oh, yeah, all that, all the...
Oh, sure, Phil, get technical.
Yeah,
get
all the...
technical.
All the visible parts of air pollution, not just the... it's not actually caused by greenhouse gases or anything like that. It's actually caused by the little particles inside that also that blow out the back of your car, that blow out of industry.
Okay, so what's the effect here then?
Well, what's happening is all these little tiny particles, they're having two effects. First of all, the sunlight is reflecting off these particles and going bouncing back into space. The second thing is that all these little particles are actually like the seeds for clouds. So inside the clouds, your little water droplets, the little particles capture water droplets, and because there's so many of these little tiny particles, clouds are getting more and more water droplets and they're becoming more dense and therefore they are reflecting even more light.
So the ultimate upshot is?
Well, what's happened is over the last 50 years, we've actually had a 22% reduction in the amount of sunlight that is hitting the Earth from 1950 up until now.
So this is making us harder for us to get a tan? This is meaning that we're walking around not needing sunglasses anymore?
Well, I suppose the upshot is less skin cancer.
Mm-hmm.
The downside is that, of course, yeah, it is changing our environment where plants and things like that are not getting as much sun as they used to. But the other big unexpected upshot is that it is actually reducing the effect of the severity of the greenhouse effect.
It's reducing the greenhouse effect.
Yes.
So we've got global warming being counteracted by global dimming.
That's exactly right. So
Phil, you've got your hand up.
Those guys who had manufactured CFCs and destroyed the ozone layer, they had our good intention there.
Yeah, they were actually good guys.
They did. So
isn't there also an effect on rainfall? Doesn't it move the rain away from where it used to go to new places where it's too much?
Yes, well, that's what's happening is because the clouds are becoming becoming more seeded, if you like, for want of a better phrase, because there's so many more of these little nanoparticles in there. The clouds are forming in different areas and they weren't traditionally forming, so rainfall patterns are changing.
So we've basically got we're all getting used to global warming. Okay, we're ruining the world with global warming. Now we've got global dimming to contend with, which might be working for us on one hand, working against us on the other hand. Matt, thanks for bringing in a story that for something else for us to lie awake at night worrying about. Kat, you've also got something for us to have a bit of a chat about tonight.
Yeah, well, I found this interesting fact today, which is 60% of all you listeners have a black evil soul.
So this is 60% of people out there.
People out there, yep, through the whole population, have black evil soul.
Those of you who are listening to the radio, I'm sure we're not talking about you.
Only
60%.
Yeah.
And this is according to an experiment carried out by Professor Stanley Milligram. It's quite old, in 1963, which involved participants administering electric shocks to someone in the next room.
I think I might have heard of this one. Yeah, go on. It's a great story.
Yeah. Well, what happened, basically, were participants came in and were told that they were the teacher in the experiment and that there were other participants in the next room who were... the learner, and what the teacher had to do was every time the learner got a question wrong, operate a shock generator, and it had to increase it every single time that the learner got a question wrong. And what Milligram found was that people will continue to give shocks to the learner even until severe harm is caused.
So they've got an experiment where they've asked you to come in. They've said, can you just administer electric shocks to someone?
Yeah.
And you keep increasing that shock even when you're frying the person.
Yeah.
Because you've been told to.
Just because you've been told to.
I think the experiment shows that people are very good at obeying instructions rather than that they've got evil souls.
Because isn't the thing about this?
Yeah, what's interesting about this as well is an insight into sort of human nature. And for example, in Nazi Germany, sort of, you know, how all these groups of people committed such atrocities and sort of to other human beings, and it's lots of people asking, well, why did this happen? And this could be one sort of...
So they can turn around and say, well, yeah, but you shocked the guy, right? You keep frying him while we...
Yeah,
you know,
and this is 60% of the population.
Can I just put a defence of Stanley Milgram and the scientists that... Yeah. The electric shocks weren't actually hooked up to the subject.
I think that's an important point.
No, it was hypothetical. Yeah. Nobody was harmed in this experiment.
The person who was the trainer believed that it was and saw the person suffering.
So it's a belief.
But they could hear the suffering.
And they could hear the suffering, but no actual people were shocked for scientific purposes.
So there you go. Listeners out there in Radio Land, just think to yourselves, like, if there's three of you in the room, look to the left, look to the right, those other two would have done that to you. Wow. That's about all time we've got in this All Mics On kind of crazy episode of Discovery. But it's been fun. We've enjoyed it. Maybe we'll do it again. Joining me in the studios here of UTS down here in Sydney at 2SER have been Matt.
Until next time.
The very poetic Phil.
I'm Phil, but I'm not a dill.
Oh, yes you are. Kat.
Goodbye, everyone.
Helen.
Goodbye for now.
Ian.
Defending the mad scientist.
And Bridget.
Bye.
And David.
See you later.
My name's Chris Stewart. You've been listening to Discovery, which is brought to you around Australia thanks to the Community Broadcasting Network. And if you're listening to us in Sydney, it's because of our dear friends here at 2SER in the UTS Towers. Thanks for listening. Join us next week for more Discovery. But in the meantime, bye for now.